Why so serious?
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play dude.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the toy department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
Toy department time, boys and girls. I'm Derek Madden. He's Matt Kolsky. How are you today?
Not bad. Doing pretty good. How about you?
I'm hanging in there. Lot going on in the work life. So
I hear that, man.
It's nice to take a break and sort of check in on culture, though. You know what I mean?
True story. I am overwhelmed by the amount of sports because I really got used to living a life where, like, my job was just showing up for work. I mean, it's not to say I wasn't doing show prep, but I didn't have hours of games to watch every night. But that's what baseball season usually is for me, is a bit of a slog of watching a minimum of two baseball games every night. And then I had nothing, and now I have everything. Baseball,
yeah.
Basketball, football's around the corner. It's out of control. Soccer's happening. Hockey.
Yeah, this says to me that you were a little checked out on the soccer because soccer was a nice little warm up over the last month or so of having like a couple of games every day.
I mean, look, I'm always pretty checked out on the soccer. Let's not lie. Yeah. I vaguely pay attention to the soccer world, but
I know this because we haven't had the opportunity to talk. Talk trash about Arsenal's win over Chelsea in the FA Cup final.
Oh, that was garbage. See, like I did watch that, and it was infuriating.
You did. I will say this about our boy.
Yeah, he's baller,
Christian Pulisic.
He's killer.
Who scored a goal in the game, and that was somehow not his most baller move. His most baller move was tearing a hamstring on a breakaway. And as he's tearing the hamstring, and you can see him, like, crying out in pain, somehow still trying to score before he falls down and rolls around in agony and is out for 3 months. Like, that, you just don't really see that. Like, a guy take a shot with a clearly busted hamstring.
No, and yet.
Yeah, but that was a move.
And yet, here we are again with the greatest American soccer player of all time on the DL for the Champions League, and it sucks.
It does suck, and I, you know, Chelsea is spending a ton of money this summer, and they're going to bring in a bunch of attacking talent. So, you know, as good as he's been and as important to their attack as he's been, you know, there's probably going to be some fighting for a spot again next season.
But I wonder if his performance here changed that math a little bit. Assuming he's back for next season, I wonder if that changes where the money's allocated slightly. Like, they need more attacking talent than him anyway, because it's rough. But they're old. It's an old team in a lot of ways, and they need to change some things out. But to me, Pulisic is part of the future, so I feel like he's played well enough to earn himself, if not a starting role, a consistent amount of playing time moving forward.
Yeah, he's not going to just disappear, presuming that he returns healthy. Because, you know, the new season, like, the next Arsenal match
turns around fast.
The next season is in 3 weeks. So, yeah. You know, it's it's going to happen fast this year, as it were.
Here's where I was getting at, though, is we never do that for my job. So, I watch soccer here and there, but it's not like homework
for
work, you know? Yeah. Whereas, like, I really got to watch the Giants and the A's, and I want to watch basketball, and we do talk about it. So being on top of all that, and I'm watching a couple of games of that a day. And then I enjoy the hockey, so I try to watch some of that. And I've watched, you know, 10 minutes of MLS because there's just no more time.
Yeah, so, I have been watching MLS, and I've kind of had to just say no to hockey because there's only so many hours in the day, particularly when we're, you know, having jobs and
– and watching Perry Mason.
And watching Perry Mason, exactly. Which, you know, if watching soccer or hockey feels like homework, like, Perry Mason's felt a little bit like a doctoral thesis. In
so
terms
let's
of
just
the
let's do that right now. Let's start right there, okay? And maybe we'll get back to sports in some capacity to actually talk about the sports. But I think clearly based on the fact that I watched all of it and I'm not as angry as you are, I think I like this more than you. And I think
that's fair.
I think the thing I can most easily say about Perry Mason is that after watching 7 episodes, as opposed to, I think it was 2 or 3 I had watched the first time, I at least understand what people are talking about. I understand why people like this. I understand what's good about it. And I understand why in some ways I could see that, like, this is a really good show. Or at least there are the parts of a really good show here. And that's why I kind of wish you had gotten through 7, because there's a moment in 7 where I was like, oh, if this is the show, I'm in.
Okay, I have a point to make. Hold on. Alexa, stop. Sorry, the radio was playing the whole time, and I was like dying to like get rid of it. But I can't do that without saying anything. Okay, I'm back. I see what people are saying about, oh, the show has gotten better. And I think I don't know that it's gotten better necessarily. I think it's gotten more focused, you know, like as it's kind of zeroed in on this mystery and sort of settled into kind of being this sort of noir, what do they call it? Like potboiler thriller.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
And that you can follow.
Yeah. Here's, I guess the way that I sort of, to me, what sort of sums it up, and now I'm on episode 6, so I'm definitely a little bit behind where you are, and I have not gotten to that moment that you were talking about. But to me, the thing that sort of sums up how you feel about this show is like your tolerance for the inevitable 3 or 4 moments per episode where like the sax solo sets in and something like dark and sad is happening. Like if you're kind of in on those moments of like, then you're like the show. And if you're like me and you kind of,
yeah,
then you're probably not in, right?
That's funny. Like I think that's pretty good. I think that's pretty good. If the sax hits and you get a positive feeling, you're probably down for the ride. And if the sax hits and you get like a, oh God, then you probably need to quit. But I'm going to make you watch the rest of it.
It's not a show without merit. Like there are some fine actors doing fine performances. And when the show is kind of letting them cook, then great. But it's still just way too broody.
Right. So
for my general taste,
I think, and this is why I wish you'd watch 7, but I think this is probably going to be a better conversation to have next week anyway. So we'll revisit it after the finale. And again, I'm making you watch it because I feel ish right now and believe I will feel strongly after next week that like this whole season could have been one episode and then we could have had a good show.
Yep, and maybe.
I think part of what makes the degree of broodiness and darkness so annoying is that very little is happening for so much of it, and very much of what is happening in the first like 4 episodes, I would almost say they don't care if you follow it at all because it's not important.
Yeah. I'm not sure what the brooding is in service of, other than that it's sort of de rigueur on television. Like it just seems so unnecessary.
It's also
to make Mason this kind of like, you know, semi drunkard PTSD, you know, guy.
Right. And I feel like it's almost an origin story because I think he becomes less and less that guy with every episode. And I think particularly over the last couple, I mean, I'm going to put it on the table and sorry if I'm spoiling for you slightly, but have you seen him get his past the bar?
that's the very last, actually, I believe that's the very last scene I watched. Like, he's wearing a nice suit and taking an oath. So I'm assuming that's right. That he passes the bar. Yes.
And
so
that in and of itself levels him up a bit, but he's still sort of like the drunkard PTSD version of a lawyer. And
that was immediately preceded by him, you know, like just getting slammed in the kitchen while, what's her face, you know, clearly seemed concerned, you know what I mean? So
But then I'm saying, like, as he gets into the courtroom and at first is uncomfortable but starts to become, you know what I'm saying, like, he is becoming the Perry Mason we had in our heads before this started.
Right.
And
but wouldn't you just rather watch a show about the Perry Mason we had in our heads before all this started?
That's exactly what I'm saying. And there's another thing that I won't spoil for you that happens that makes me even more interested in what's happening. So if this was a film noir series about Perry Mason the lawyer, I think it would be more interesting and we would both be less annoyed.
Because right now I'm pretty annoyed.
Yeah, it's pretty annoying. It's very slow, and it's incredibly accurately noir, but consistently begs the question, why? And what are we doing here? Yeah. And I think, like, you need more than mood, and you don't need 8 ponderous hour-long episodes to set a mood.
Agreed. And right now, it's just, you know, and I can see how maybe that improves, but it's just not a place where I'm not enjoying spending time in 1930s Los Angeles.
And to our particular goals, it's a rough binge. It's a very – it's the sort of binge that'll put you to sleep.
Yep, and has.
Me too.
All right. I think maybe we should move on to the other show that I kind of looked at a little bit side-eyed. Which is Umbrella Academy on Netflix. So I went, you know, I didn't finish season one and decided to watch the last episode of season one before I dived into season two.
And that was probably
a mistake.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
In that it just brought me back to, like, oh, yeah, I remember why I quit the show. The show's fucking stupid. But I would say the things that people have said about season two kind of picking up have been true for me. And I, as I watched the first two episodes of season two, I started to warm up a little bit. And I think for me, the Umbrella Academy sort of boils down to this. Like, I don't find the particular characters of the story all that interesting. And so when it's about the, like, familial relationship or all of their desires to, like, make good with their father, or why everyone hates Vanya or any of that stuff, like, I don't care very much. But when it's coalesced around a sort of central plot, like in these episodes, and they're sort of trying to figure out the, you know, time loop that they're in and how to, you know, save the world, it's a much better and more propulsive show in the first two episodes of season two. And so that, and then when you combine that with some of the sort of stylistic directorial flourishes, the way the show uses music and some of the special effects, far, far more watchable to me than the first season, which I just kind of thought was a mess, if that makes sense.
I don't agree about the first season. I loved it, but I think thinking about this show to your tastes, like, the first season, again, not unlike Perry Mason, could have been one episode for you to set up who these people are, and then you're more interested in putting them into the world in an interesting way. And I think that's what season two does. I've watched a lot more of it than you, but it's more of a story about the world and less of a story about the internal lives of these people who you don't particularly care about. But what it does do is, you know, we talk a lot about how, and I think a lot of people are like you in this respect, when it comes to sort of fantastical works of fiction, you can kind of get on board with a premise of that includes magic and craziness, provided there's, like, something else to hold on to to make it worth watching. And I think that's what they did a really good job of in season two, is like, yeah, you like knowing who these people are is kind of important to what's going on, and their particular oddities factor into the plot. But the plot is really about 1960s America and the assassination of President Kennedy and what to do in a time loop and all that stuff. So I'm with you. I mean, I think it's really, really good. And
yeah,
I also think, to your point, things like the music, the way it's shot, like all that stuff is delightful. This is a funny show, and like sickly funny.
Yes, there is a bit of a sixth sense of humor to it. I do feel like there's a lot of the show is about trying to get people in funny outfits. But
yeah,
they're really good outfits.
Yes,
you know, for the most part.
It's and the like number five, whose name we still don't know, is always in the same outfit. But that outfit is constantly getting like destroyed in one way or another, and he somehow got another one in the next scene. It's hilarious.
Yeah.
This little like ridiculous schoolboy outfit he's wearing like regenerates itself. It's excellent.
Yeah. Or there, even that scene, there's like the, you know, the Swedes are in the kitchen doing stuff, and they cut to the guy's not wearing pants for some reason. And
yeah,
it sort of works, you know.
Yes, and it makes you laugh in like a silly way, but it all kind of holds together with its sort of bizarre flavor.
Yes, and you know, like I don't know what Kate Walsh like how they decided to outfit Kate Walsh, but I enjoy it. Like, it's so over the top and insane half the time.
Oh,
but,
man. She's great.
Yeah.
She has a thing, but she's so good at it.
Yeah. It's interesting. Like, and I do like it when it's, you know, outside of the service of the Grey's Anatomy world, because I think it's more effectively deployed and,
I've never seen something that like show, this. So I don't know, but she is in a ton of movies, and she generally does this in a way, like a version of this. And frankly, for the first few years that I saw her, I was like, man, that's that lady who looks like Kristen Wiig. But she just did, like, this very specific skill that she has is unique and tremendous.
It's funny you mentioned Kristen Wiig, because she really reminds me like a younger version of Wendy Malick. Do you remember Wendy Malick from like Just Shoot Me?
Not
and
really.
Dream On and a bunch of other things,
Malick,
where she plays the uptight waspy lady really well.
Okay, sure. Yeah, I know Wendy Malick.
Yeah.
That's funny. I think of Wendy Malick as the lady who looks like what's her face from Arrested Development.
Yeah, I can see that too. Jessica Walter, is that what
Jessica
you're thinking
Walter,
of?
Jessica Walter, yeah.
Yeah, she could be a young Jessica Walter too, although the energy is a little different, I feel like, with Jessica Walter.
No, totally. But she could play Jessica Walter in a movie.
Yes.
Just like, agreed, you know, Kristen Wiig could play Kate Walsh in a movie.
All right. So, yeah. So I have to say, I started out being like, fuck this with the Umbrella Academy. But now I can sort of see myself watching the rest of the season. Although
I mean,
some of the stuff
I've read
suggests it does eventually go off the rails a little bit.
It's way off the rails. I mean, I'm on episode 6 or 7 or something like that, and it's nuts. But it's about more than the first season, I would say, pretty consistently. And I don't know. For me, like, this is just a whole lot of fun. It's not groundbreaking, but it's a good time.
Yeah, I would agree with that assessment 100%. That is another assessment that I would share about the Go-Go's documentary. Do you
that
agree?
It's not groundbreaking.
It's not at all groundbreaking, but it's a good time.
Yeah, I think probably mileage may vary based on how interested you are in the Go-Go's. I think it's probably like it's. I mean this in the most respectful possible way. This could have been covered in a Behind the Music.
And it was. And
right.
Behind the Music was better, I think, in some ways.
Yeah, because here's the thing. It's – I hate saying this, but, like, the only exceptional thing about the Go-Go's is that they were the first all-female band to write and play their own instruments. And that's an awesome achievement, but it's a single achievement that doesn't actually get you to a great documentary film. And other than that, the Go-Go's have the most average rock star rock band story of all time. It's like the lead singer was a bit of a diva, and the lead guitarist got into heroin, and then we broke up because we were fighting over money. And it's like, yeah, like every other rock band that ever had success? Cool. And it's, well, like, if you're interested in the Go-Go's, it's interesting to know their story. And I learned things, and it's not poorly made. It's just, other than their distinction and their tremendous accomplishment of being the first all-female band that really was just, like, a normal rock band that happened to be staffed by women. And that's cool. And the thumbs up and power to them. But after you get past that, it's like, oh, you're an average, top-selling rock and roll band.
Well, and I have to see, I feel like the filmmaking part of this, the documentary making part of this, suffers from that same thing, that it's just very template documentary. It's just, here is the story of the Go-Go's, and we have interviewed all the members of the Go-Go's and some of the people footage around the Go-Go's.
Yeah.
Yes. And we're gonna mix that up with some old footage, and here you go. Like, I felt like this needed, like, you know, like one of those tricks from, like, The Last Dance, where you have the iPad and you're showing them footage of other interviews, or it just needed something, some kind of kick in the butt to make it sort of a little bit more propulsive. Because it's like, yeah, okay, the story of the Go-Go's is found to be interesting, and that some interesting things happened to them.
Yes.
But I didn't feel like I didn't feel like the film was interesting, if that makes sense. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I also think, like, it's interesting, again, in just such a mainstream way.
Yeah.
I don't know what the hook was, besides, again, their accomplishment. And, like, I don't want to belabor it so much that it sounds like I'm being sarcastic or something, because I that really is a great thing. It's just,
yeah,
it's
like, you don't want to diminish it, because you know it was hard. Like, they worked hard and went through a lot of hard shit. Yeah.
And you hear the stories about, like, after they had We Got the Beat, nobody wanted to sign them. Like, that's crazy, man.
Yeah.
Can you imagine? It's nothing but sexism. It's nothing but a bunch of rich white dudes going, these girls got lucky, but they can't do it again.
Yeah. And you could, that's one of those things about the entertainment business. I mean, obviously back then, but even now, is you can just kind of do that, because it's all under the guise of, well, people don't want this. You know what I mean? And I think that that's a good faith thought. A lot of times it's wrong, but you know what I mean? Like, you're like, I can't sell this. Just becomes a stand-in for people, you know, not for everyone sort of sexist or racist or classist preconceptions. You know what I mean?
But that's the thing. It is based on those preconceptions. So even if it's essentially good faith, it's bad and it's wrong.
Right.
And it's small.
I
know you're not defending it, but the key, which I was getting to, is it's small-minded. You can't imagine that people could be interested in stuff that you've never considered before. And it continues to be the biggest problem for the rich and powerful people in this country to this day.
Right. Because it's like, you look back and you go, well, how could you think people be interested in We Got the Beat? You know what
right.
I mean? Like, this is not, we're not, this is not the revolution right here. You know
right.
what I mean? Like,
Our Lips Are Sealed. Like, come on. These are easy classics. And again, not to diminish the Go-Go's, there's just, it's like a solid B on every level.
It still happens today, by the way. Like, why isn't Haim all over the radio?
I don't know.
People don't know what to do with them. Because it's three girls making rock music, and it's not quite rock enough for the rock people because it's girls.
Right.
It's not quite pop enough for the pop people because it's rock.
But people go, I don't know
what to do with it.
Yeah, but the people who actually listen to music in the world love it. You know, it's one of these things. It's Who knows? I'm not sure that can ever be fixed. Well, it can. I mean, people like you need to fix it, though. And I don't know, to your credit.
I'm one guy.
I don't know how many people like you there are.
Yes, you know what I mean? So
That's I don't mean to burden you with others' failures.
No, but for what it's worth, we do, and I do know other people that think about this stuff all the time. And then I know lots of other people who are blind and oblivious and, you know, just like, give me another 21 Pilots track and we'll call it a day. So that's, you know, I guess that is the state of the world. And it is hard to move systems from the inside. But yeah, back to the Go-Go's. It's hard for me to be like, right, this is the kind of thing that you would recommend for someone who likes the Go-Go's.
Yep.
And probably not someone who doesn't care at all, right? Like, that's
probably
that's kind
or,
of the
or someone who really likes music history and doesn't know about the Go-Go's. You know, I don't regret spending an hour and a half on this.
Yeah,
I mean, just it's in an age where there are so many, and we're about to talk about one remarkable documentary works. This is not one.
right. This is a work.
Yes. And a perfectly good one.
Yeah. You know, yep. And it's like, right. If you want to spend time in that world, or if you want to catch up on some music history, like, I think they're an interesting chapter. And I think that's entirely due to the Go-Go's story. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I don't know that this film does anything to bring out the Go-Go story. And I don't know that you necessarily, honestly, even be better off not be better off watching the original Behind the Music. This is just a little less salacious and probably puts their history, I think, maybe in a little bit more serious context than the documentary, which focuses on, or than Behind the Music, which I think focuses a little bit more on some of the behavior and the drugs and the male groupies to what extent
yep.
there was. So yeah. So I take it from that comment that you really enjoyed Last Chance U. That's your remarkable documentary in this context.
It's not even what I was thinking about, but yes, I watched the whole thing.
You're talking about I'll Be Gone in the Dark, right?
Yes. But I love them both. Differently.
They're very different. So which one do you want to tackle first?
Well, since you said tackle and brought it up, let's talk about Last Chance U. A show that is like, here's an easy sell if you've never watched it before. If you liked Cheer, you're gonna like Last Chance U.
If you like Cheer and also like football.
Okay, fair.
You know what I mean? Like, there are a lot of people who watch Cheer that have no interest in football and may not like Last Chance U. But other than that,
I don't know though. There's so much here besides football. In the same way that I don't care about competitive cheerleading, but I love Cheer.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's a lot of football, though.
There is a lot of football, but there was a lot of cheerleading and Cheer.
Stories, I guess a fair amount. I felt like not that much cheerleading, or I think I would have had a harder time with it.
Okay, maybe a little less, but there were a lot of scenes in the cheerleading practice room, and there were a lot of
cheerleading practice, but not a lot, right? There's really only the one episode that kind of focuses on the nationals or whatever, right? Whereas this, you get a lot of games.
You get a game or two each episode, but I don't know really how different that is than, like, when they go outside and practice in their uniforms. So, whatever. But this is a silly conversation. The point is,
agreed.
Stylistically, it's very similar.
And this is super compelling. The stories are, in fact, great. So
remarkable. I mean, these kids are remarkable. And they are not just existing, but to some degree, to varying degrees, thriving under what seemed to be impossible circumstances for some of them.
Yeah. Yeah. I think one of the differences between this and Cheer, or at least this season of Last Chance U and Cheer, is that I feel like Oakland is a real character in this story, the way that that Texas town, whose name I've already forgotten, was not. You know what I mean? Navarro.
What?
Yeah,
but I don't. The town wasn't Navarro, right?
No. Yeah, it was in. Whereas Oakland, and just sort of the character of it, and the gentrification of it and the difficulties of housing and life and all of that and the music of it. Like, it's all there, you know. And even when you're watching the games and you're seeing that sky, that Oakland skyline in the background as they're, you know, playing in that stadium, it just, you know, and there's hyphy music, and it just feels like Oakland feels very much a part of this in a way that, you know, I found really enjoyable as someone who, you know, gets nostalgic for my time in the Bay Area. Like, that part of it was really great.
And as a proud Oakland homeowner, I mean, that stuff's important to me. And
yeah.
And you know, I think, how far have you gotten?
I've watched the first two.
Okay. So later on, and whatever, it's not really a spoiler, there's a really interesting scene with a police officer talking about gentrification and kind of saying, like, listen, I understand the perspective of we don't want to lose the good parts of the old Oakland, but also, you know, with gentrification in certain ways come positive things. So the he doesn't say this, but my takeaway, and I think the way I understand development in a place like Oakland, is you want to do it, but you want to do it responsibly. You don't want to be actively displacing people. You want to find solutions for lower income housing to be part of the future of Oakland, while also bringing money into a city that needs it. So it's a really complicated thing that is very close to my heart and mine, living right in the middle of this city. So yeah, that part of it is excellent, especially for me, but I think interesting to anyone who's interested in those sorts of issues.
How much, as an Oakland resident, like, how much awareness did you have of Laney College football coming into this show?
I knew they were a viable JC team. I had no idea they'd won a national title.
Yeah, and I, like, I've heard of Laney College, but I didn't even know they had a football team. You know,
I knew about the football team. I may have known at some point about the title and just forgotten about it, but it wasn't something I was actively thinking about.
It feels like one of these things that just could be happening under your nose in an area like that, so much going on.
And it is.
I sort of imagine myself, you know, on a freeway driving by this stadium at some point, you know what I mean? And
right.
Just going, like, thinking, like, oh, yeah, I wonder what Laney College football is like. And then you find out, like, there's this whole rich sort of world happening in there.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, I think the Coach Beam is just a really compelling figure. And I think it's just a really interesting place. Like, they choosing this particular setting, I think, was really smart. Now, I haven't watched the previous four seasons. I don't know, you know, how they compare to some of the other ones.
Well, I know there are two. There's only two other schools. There's two seasons each of two other schools, and I think they are both extremely rural. So I think this is very different in that respect. I don't know if the towns in those places are as much characters in the show. I would guess they kind of are, but this is a very different circumstance. And I think also you just realize that any junior college program, as I am coming to understand this, or at least a wide number of competitive junior college programs, would be interesting fodder for this, because the type of player that they attract have, you know, complicated stories for the most part.
Yeah, they're there for a reason. Although, maybe this is typical of junior college or not. But, like, from just a football perspective, like, the amount of crazy shit that happens to them in the first three games of the season is, like, they couldn't have known coming in that, oh, we'd be starting a wide receiver and quarterback by game three, right?
Yeah, that's just and the wide receiver that happened to be the one they were following as he lives in his car, you know? Like, that is the most incredible bad luck for the team and the most incredible good luck for the filmmakers that you could have. Right.
Yes. Yeah. That did happen at Kentucky, by the way, last season. They had turned a wide receiver.
It can happen. But as one of the coaches says at one point, and by the way, one of the great parts of this is the, like, little coaches group that meets up at the bar near Jack London Square. And I know that bar. And it is.
Do.
Oh yeah, it's a classic dive right by the Jack London, which is all fancied up now. It's great. It's like in the middle of port warehouses, basically. And those guys are talking about it like, we come in the season with 3-4 quarterbacks. You just never expect this in game three.
In game three, yeah, it's wild. Those coaches are great, and I would like to drink with them.
Yes. I have. Don't think I haven't considered just like wandering down there on a Friday night just to see if they're there. It's not far from, like, I could bike there for sure.
Yeah. So, you know, we've talked about worlds you want to spend time in a couple of times. And to me, this was the easiest one to just hang.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, I only watched two, but I can easily see how you finish this whole season because they just go. It's easy to roll from. This is an easy binge.
Yep.
Much like Cheer was, to be honest.
Yeah, exactly. It's really good. And if you're into those sorts of heartbreaking and heartwarming sports stories, this is up your alley.
Yeah. And I think it's kind of right in the pocket for us. So
definitely.
All right. So I'll be gone in the dark.
Harder.
From yeah, definitely not as easy a binge, I would say.
Yeah.
But a really interesting story. And, you know, while we're talking about form of a documentary, to take these narratives, these sort of two separate narratives, the pure crime case of it all and the arc of solving this, and then sort of mixing that in with Michelle McNamara and her journey and then the journey of those she left behind to complete her work. Like, what a really interesting series this was, and a fascinating watch, I thought.
Yeah, that's why I brought it up when we were talking about the Go-Go's, because where the Go-Go's, as you said, is sort of a boilerplate documentary about what in many ways is a boilerplate rock, you know, star rock band. This is a totally unique conception of how to pull off a documentary series with a totally unique story. And it's dark and disturbing and just excellent, I thought.
Yeah. And I thought I had really a thoughtful approach to telling a crime tale.
To telling a crime tale and to telling what is fundamentally a tragedy about Michelle McNamara.
Yeah. Yeah. It the one thing I would say that I think maybe I struggled with a little bit, because I think that the documentary touches really well on like the positive aspects of the work that Michelle was doing, even at, you know, sort of a personal cost to her, and that, you know, like it seems pretty clear, like they would not have found this guy, you know, yep, without her work.
Agreed.
Like, and, or even really, her work, I think, was essential in understanding that this was a guy. You know what I mean? So even that, right? Because, you know, he's committing these sort of strings of crimes in different towns, and people weren't necessarily tying them together, particularly back then. So that part of it's great. I think it's sort of less successful maybe in, and it touches on it, but to me, it doesn't necessarily deal with the idea of this sort of cottage industry of murder as entertainment. And, you know, I'm going to tread carefully because I have a lot of people close to me who are in this category who consider themselves murderinos. Mm-hmm. But like what it means to be a murderino, or the fact that most of the people who are, you know, sort of rabidly consuming this kind of content are women, even though a lot of these are horrific stories about the abuse of women. And I, you know, I'm not saying any of it's bad. I just don't totally know what it all means, you know? And I don't know that the story reckons with that, even though it's clearly like a big part of it. Like, that's who Patton Oswalt is talking to as this stuff comes out. And, all of these people are kind of doing these podcasts, and we're all sort of consuming this, even this, right, as entertainment, and, you know, kind of watching these sort of horrific crimes and these people who have been brutalized and victimized in ways that I think the show does a great job of really humanizing. But like, it's all sort of packaged for us to consume. And there is something, right, that's a little bit creepy about that, isn't there?
Yeah. The phrase that jumps into my head is it's like uncomfortably voyeuristic.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that they, like you said, touch on. But I'm not sure they investigate as like a pathology, which I think it kind of is in some cases. I think there are plenty of people who are just morbidly fascinated, and that's like, you know, me loving mediocre fantasy television shows.
Yeah,
right?
Like I say it without judgment. Like I, you know, but, like serial killer stories, and we enjoy Mindhunter or
yeah,
Seven or, yes, you know, like I get it.
But there
know?
Is something but. About the documentary real crime fad that feels potentially sinister, at least in the wrong person. Like the obsession with murder could go wrong is the way it feels to me. And that might just be my own naivete and fear. But it's weird. It's a weird thing, and it's a modern thing that I think probably deserves its own documentary. I'm not sure. Like this, they addressed that in so much as it was Michelle's world. And they talked
yeah,
about the
like
fact
she's a
that
real
it is
part of that culture.
Yeah, yeah, and they talked about that it is sort of an addiction, and they addressed that with her personally. They didn't investigate it overall on any deep level, but again, I think that probably needs its own documentary.
Yeah, and I would say, you know, and we see this in, you know, it's sometimes in other shows. This idea of people being amateur detectives, like Michelle McNamara was a case where it really worked out for the good. You know what I mean? And she was, you know, really good at what she was doing. And you can tell the genuine respect that the police had for her.
Yeah. And professional.
But
I mean, that's the thing, right?
Yeah. Yes, exactly. But I would imagine there are a lot of other people who are would almost be vigilantes in some way,
yep,
or who were out there not knowing what they're doing,
yep,
and kind of just screwing all this up. You know what I mean?
And that's
so
scary.
So, and I feel like, and maybe I'm crazy, I feel like Patton Oswalt actually played one of those in a thing.
I think you're right. It was, what was it? He was like the leader. Oh, it was Veronica Mars.
Right. Yep. Yeah. You're right. Mm-hmm. That's exactly it.
The new yep. Veronica Mars. Yeah.
So yeah, like I don't know. I feel like that's sort of an unexplored part of this, sort of lurking beneath the surface. But on the whole, really enjoyed this, and I thought it was a really interesting exploration. Over 6 weeks, where the story went in sort of all of these different directions, and
yeah.
It just to kind of the amount of editing and thinking of this to put this together in this way, I think is a real triumph of storytelling.
Agreed. And creative in terms of just like the conception.
Yeah. And artful, I think, and just in the way that it all came together and, the tone and the mood that it set and, really well done. Really well done.
Agreed.
Yeah. All right. That's kind of our stuff for this week, right?
Was it? Is that everything? Did we do it?
Yeah, I think we did do it. Is there anything you want
oh,
to mention
no, we
from
didn't.
All these?
We did not.
What did we miss?
There's,
what did we miss?
There's the thing. It was not on the list because I don't know that we totally knew it was happening when we did the podcast.
Oh, that's right. We did not. I didn't put it on the list because it had not existed in the world yet. We did not talk about Black is King from Beyonce, which surprise dropped in between putting this podcast out and not.
Yeah.
A visual album.
Uh-huh.
you know, look, it's I often joke about how it's essentially illegal to criticize Beyonce.
Yes.
But I have nothing bad to say about this.
That's right.
Like, so
I mean, I think you're
I'm not going to run afoul of the Beehive now.
I think you're not wrong with that assessment of the critical consensus around Beyonce. However, when's the last time you had something bad to say, honestly, about her creative output? Like, it's I think the least complimentary thing I could say about this is it is a lot. I mean, it's a lot.
Yeah, that was what I was about to say. Like, it could have been, you probably could have edited it down a little bit. Like, it's sort of hard to watch an hour and 15 minutes of videos straight, yes, essentially.
But this is the easiest hour and 15 minutes of videos to watch since MTV's heyday. You know, yeah, it's not unlike Lemonade. There is so much to digest here from a thematic perspective. It's thoughtful, it's creative, it's artful, it has a theme that is understandable, you know, it's basically just the theme is Africa, more or less.
Yeah.
But
it's a little hard for me because, you know, I haven't seen The Lion King, so I didn't get many of those allusions at all.
You've seen the original Lion King, though.
No, I've not seen any Lion King content.
What?
No.
Why?
I'm too old. Too old. Like, I was kind of, you know, past the age of Disney cartoons when The Lion King came out. And well,
it's
don't
Hamlet.
Really have any desire. Yeah. So
it's just Hamlet, basically. Have you seen Hamlet?
I have seen Hamlet, yes.
It's African Hamlet.
Okay.
African animals doing Hamlet.
Fair enough.
So, you know, the basic idea being like the king's dad dies, or the prince's, you know, the king dies, the prince thinks it's his fault, and his evil uncle takes over until he comes back. But I don't know that the allusions to the Lion King story per se were that important beyond like the words in the context they were presented in. And I don't think it was that complicated in that way. I'm sure there's all sorts of layers to what was done here, but
yeah,
to understand the broad themes is not.
No, hard. No. Agreed.
And
I just, for me, it was more like, I don't know what I don't know here. You
sure.
know what I mean?
And I'm saying
it's
certainly
appreciable on a visual level.
Yeah,
and
I don't think
on an audio level.
Right, that's what I was about to get to. I don't think there's that much you're missing with the Lion King quotes. I do think musically this is a rich tapestry, man. It's really, she uses a ton of traditional African sounds and rhythms in a bunch of different creative and interesting ways. And just
yeah,
like,
I think.
Go ahead.
I was gonna say, I think it's maybe some of her most commercially accessible just music in a long time.
Maybe,
you know?
Yeah. But it sounds like Beyonce, and it sounds thoughtful, which is like a characteristic of everything she's done for the last several years, and I think does set it apart from Destiny's Child and you know, early solo Beyonce.
Yep. Do you think, do you find it interesting that in 2020, there's still this Beyonce, Taylor Swift dynamic like at play in the culture? You know what I mean?
It speaks
and that
to
Taylor Swift makes a sort of groundbreaking, like, not groundbreaking, this sort of big splash with this record that's very navel-gazy,
yes,
and inward, and then Beyonce comes out with this like rich tapestry 2 weeks later.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's appropriate. No shade to Taylor, yeah, but there's a clear hierarchy there in my book, and I'm just excited. I'm excited that this is the Beyonce we're getting, and that, you know, her career went the way it did.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it is almost, you know, there are very few artists that get to this place where they have the complete freedom to explore whatever idea they want, you know? And she has now been there for a while, and I feel like she's really making use of that. And that's exciting.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt.
You know, and by the way, Taylor is too, I think, to a large extent. Like,
yeah,
you know what I mean?
No,
like,
again, it's no shade to her, but she's, yeah. She, you know, look, the easiest criticism to levy against anyone in any walk of life is they're not Beyonce.
It's true.
Like, you could say that about yeah. almost anything anyone else in the world has ever done. Yeah, that's great, but it's he's not Beyonce. Hey, look, LeBron James is a phenomenal basketball player, arguably the greatest of all time. He's not Beyonce.
And you're right. I think even LeBron would kind of be like, I guess not.
Exactly. No, it's inarguable about everyone.
That's why, you know, the fact that Solange has managed to like carve out some artistic real estate for herself in this world is
good
like
for her.
It's a damn miracle, and it's really like an achievement in the same way that like you know, Bronny James, you know, if he's able to carve out some space for himself as a basketball player, sure. will be like an incredible achievement.
You know who I thought of when you said this?
To enter into that world with that name is like, man, that's rough.
Yeah. Well, Suns though, at least it's like a different generation. I think what Solange did is even harder. And the only person who jumped to mind, although it's not a perfect analog, is Joaquin Phoenix.
Yeah, he really did it. And I think, you know, maybe, I don't know, does it help or hurt that Joaquin or that River was sort of short-circuited?
Well, right. It's both, right? Because he didn't have a chance to put together the breadth of work, but at the same time, he's a legend whose image can't
right.
be
he's
tarnished.
Got the, like, the Cobain kind of thing going, right?
Exactly.
Or the Hendrix, you know what I mean?
Where right. And, like, there's but no just black in marks. General, like, who's the little sibling of a superstar that was able to do something artistically the way Solange or Joaquin Phoenix have? I can't think of a single other person.
Dave Franco.
Well played. There are good points, and then there are points you just can't argue with. You know what I mean? Also, that joke works on a lot of levels, if you catch my meaning.
Yeah. Yeah, it sure does. all right.
I feel like we've dishonored Beyonce by taking the conversation here, so I think we need to just wrap things up.
I think that's a good idea. Before we do, since we're doing homework, this is not in the homework, but I did want to mention that this week upcoming is Shark Week.
Yes.
Is that your thing?
Yeah, I've been seeing some ads.
And there is some bonkers Shark Week programming happening. And we're not
Shaquille.
Doing this for homework. There's a Shaq shark show called Shaq Attack.
Yep. There's a Will Smith.
There's a Mike Tyson.
Yep.
Mike Tyson versus Jaws Rumble on the Reef is airing on Sunday.
Amazing.
Adam Devine's Secret Shark Lair.
Amazing.
And then just your usual, like, you know, Ghost Shark. And Mega Predators and Monster Under the Bridge. There's something called Tiger Shark King on Friday night. Alien Sharks First Contact. You know, if you're a shark,
question.
Make it up, man. There's
here's
a buffet for you this year.
This is the important question that we have to ask is how do you get your DVR to just record all of it without having to go through and select each individual show?
I bet. At least, like, because the DirecTV DVR is pretty advanced.
Yeah.
You know, it's got that kind of TiVo engine.
Yeah.
I bet that you could just set it to record Shark Week and that it would do it.
I feel, yeah, I got to check my YouTube TV, but hopefully I could just go record all Shark Week content.
Yeah. And I feel like the Comcast DVR probably has some of that same stuff.
Well, look,
so,
maybe if we stumble upon something particularly exceptional, we can talk about it next week. But
yeah.
In the meantime, we have a couple things we're definitely going to talk about.
Lights late. Feel free to go heavy on the sports this week. Champions League starts tomorrow, and I am like incredibly excited for that.
I'm out. Me and Christian Pulisic are out.
Yes, you're the Well, Chelsea's about to go out anyway, so
yeah, exactly.
You know, they'll be fun. In addition to the basketball, has just been tremendous. The defense is maybe a little bit behind, but other than that, like, the level of quality in some of these games has been
there's some sloppiness.
Astounding to me.
There's some sloppiness, but my God, they are playing hard. They are attacking the rim. I think the space around the court makes everyone see a little better and play a little freer. It's threes are going up at an astonishing rate, but it's not in a way that feels wrong. It's so good. It's so good to watch. And so many of the games have come down to the last couple minutes. It's been as good as I could have hoped.
And it does really hold from a television presentation standpoint.
Awesome.
It does really hold up without really minimal there's minimal loss in the fact that we're in this sort of weird bubble environment to me.
Totally.
All right. So if you're watching sports, you know, good
keep
for you.
Doing
go
it.
Nuts. This is your week. I, however, am going to be pitching the rest of Perry Mason because we're going to catch up on the end of that.
Yeah, baby.
This week. So a lot of episodes. Hard Knocks starts this week. They're in L.A. this year.
Yeah, double right? L.A. And I mean, who knows what this is going to look like? Are they even allowed in the same room in episode one? I don't know. Let's find out.
It's insane that this is happening. It's insane that there's an NFL season that's happening in a month, or that training camps are happening now. But like, how are you even allowing a camera crew in a room with these people?
Know.
Like, that seems.
I don't know.
Problematic.
Are they in
Does
small
the hard
rooms
crew,
at
like,
all?
Are they in a bubble somehow? Like,
I don't know. Who knows, man?
I really hope that they address this. Actually, like,
seriously,
that they break a little bit of the fourth wall on this season, because I feel like some of that's gonna be necessary.
Definitely.
And then the American Pickle, which is the new Seth Rogen movie on HBO Max.
Very.
I feel like
about
HBO
that.
Max. Still a little light on the content. You know what I mean? Like,
well, light on the original content.
Original
they have a
content,
ton
yeah.
of content, but the original
the
content,
library
yes.
is fine. Yeah. But in terms of just new things,
but
other
you know
than
what?
The stuff that you're already watching on HBO. You know?
I don't think it's terrible to roll that stuff out slowly, especially when your old library is so good. And frankly, when your app is so good, I find it to be the best app so far of all the over the top streaming apps.
Yeah, I mean, I'm partial to OG Netflix a little bit.
Well, sure, Netflix is still Netflix, but I'm talking about of all the new, like, the Peacocks and the, you know, Disney Plus, and everyone has their own over-the-top streaming now.
Yeah.
And this is the
Agreed.
Best.
Agreed. It's better than Disney Plus for sure. I think the Peacock interface is actually pretty good.
It's fine. It's fine, but
I do like the channels thing that they do.
Yep.
Where if you just want to watch like Saturday Night Live skits, you can do that. I think that's kind of neat.
Sure. It has more of a channel, you know, flipping channels feel, which is interesting. But I don't know. I really like the way HBO Max works, and it has worked very smoothly, which is a benefit.
Yeah. And while we're on the topic of these streaming things, did you see yesterday the news that Hulu is canceling High Fidelity?
Oh, no, I didn't. That's a bummer, though. I really liked it.
Yeah. Seems really unnecessary.
With all the stuff that gets green lit, that's weird.
And I don't know if that was maybe an issue of studios or Zoe Kravitz's schedule or there's something else at play here. It's just hard for me to believe that like people weren't watching it.
Except maybe they weren't. Who knows?
Yeah, I don't know. Weird.
All right. One of the things about not knowing how many people watch anything anymore.
Yeah, let's get back to knowing how many people watch things.
I would like to know.
I kind of like that.
Yep.
Yeah. All right, I'm done.
Okay, bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed, the light's out. Butter's getting hard, the eggs are cooling, and the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor, have yourself a tremendous evening.